Fab Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Wednesday, hump day, on the Brad Sesmatch Show. My name is Jared Cohen, and that's Mark McClune. We're filling in for Brad today on a beautiful April Fool's Day in the Valley of the Sun.
I am all jacked up today.
I wonder why.
Yes. Well, last night, just a magical moment up in Flagstaff. The NAU Lumberjacks advancing to the CIT finals. I'm so excited. There's just, you know, the Wildcats kind of broke our heart over the weekend. You look back at just a couple other things in sports right now that aren't going our way. The Coyotes, the Suns aren't playing very well. We have a great story with the NAU Lumberjacks, and it's exciting.
Something to hang our hat on. That's definitely what we're going to do today, because there's a lot going on around the world of sports this week. The Final Four is about to get here before we know it, and as Mark mentions, NAU still playing, still alive in the CIT. So let's get into the top stories of today, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located in the beautiful White Mountains, just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head on up now, enjoy beautiful spring weather, and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. Before we get into what's going on locally, let's talk a little bit more globally. The Final Four is going to be in action coming up here soon. Teams are starting to make their way out to Indianapolis. A lot going on in that state, so it should make for an interesting week. But Wisconsin, Kentucky, we got Duke and Michigan State, powerhouse teams. I mean, Wisconsin historically isn't a powerhouse program, but over the last 5 to 10 years, I think they've legitimized themselves as a top 20 program under Bo Ryan. You know, everyone that tries to fill out their brackets and say, here, where are your upsets? Or who do you have upsetting here? Or who do you have upsetting here? I always keep the same focus. If I'm going to miss a few games in the first round, it's okay. But every year there's behemoths in the Elite Eight, in the Final Four, and that's just the same case for this year. And that's really what people want to see deep down, even though it's the upsets that get everyone excited.
Well, I remember sitting here in January, I think, doing the show, and I said, we were talking college basketball, and I think I interrupted you rudely and said,
it was very rude. I still think about it. It keeps me
probably
up at
night. Yeah, but I think I said at the time, I think the words came out of my mouth. I don't know if there's really any point discussing any more college basketball right now, because we know who's going to win the title. We know it's going to be Kentucky.
Do we know that, though?
At this point, heading into the weekend, with the way Wisconsin played against Arizona, I don't know that. I don't know if I'm just hoping for another great game. Thoroughly enjoyed the Arizona and Wisconsin game on Saturday in Los Angeles. Myself and Eric, our fine producer, was over there, and there's some great content right now on the website.
There is some great content. Yeah. Yes.
If you're having a second screen experience, but also you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing if Wisconsin can bottle that magic. They played Kentucky last year, so they know what it takes. Mm-hmm. And just like Arizona was waiting for that rematch with Wisconsin, Wisconsin has been waiting for this rematch with Kentucky. Can they get them? If they shoot the ball, they have a chance.
You know what it's similar to? You know how the Lakers and the Spurs, the Suns always looked at them as rivals, but the Lakers and the Spurs, you know, the Lakers especially, you know, Lakers fans would be like, yeah, you know, the Suns, that's cute. You know, we've had some exciting series, but really the Celtics are our rival. But the Suns fans and the Suns faith were like, the Lakers are our rival. Yeah. That's kind of like what Wisconsin was at. Wisconsin's like, oh, yeah, U of A, you know, should be an exciting game. You know, we beat them last year. But really, U of A may be looking at us, but we're looking at Kentucky.
Because we're planning on shooting 67% from three, so it's really not going to matter anyway.
Yeah, I still can't get over that barrage of threes and Sam Decker.
Sam stinking Decker.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting to end up seeing him in a Suns uniform?
They could use him.
Because the Suns need a shooter.
They need a lot of things right now. But yeah, a shooter would definitely help. Maybe a little size at the guard position. I think he would fit in nicely.
As you're sitting here right now, who is in your national championship game?
Because you're a Wildcat, my wife's a Wildcat, and I, the contrarian in me had to pick the Wildcats just to have some skin in the game.
Yeah,
I knew I wasn't going to win the bracket, so I put the Wildcats in the championship game against Iowa State.
You were done pretty early.
So I was out pretty quick. I think it's going to be Kentucky Duke, but what's the Bruce Arians saying? My gut's been lying to me for years with other language I can't say on the radio. My gut tells me it's going to be Kentucky and Duke. But, man, if Wisconsin upsets Kentucky, this is right up there with Duke beating UNLV.
Interesting.
And were you alive for that? Do you remember that? Were you cheering? Yeah.
I was alive. I remember those UNLV teams. At the time, I didn't fully comprehend how incredible that upset was. But looking back on it, having watched the I Hate Christian Leitner documentary, which I still can't stop talking about since I watched it, I can fully appreciate how that could be at the same spectrum.
And there's something special. I mean, this time of year is so special when it comes to college basketball, because I think most of the year we're looking at football, and there's kind of that football hangover, and then when you get a special college basketball game, I would argue a special college basketball game is more special than a pro game, because of the pageantry involved, because of the where were you when Leitner hit the shot. If Wisconsin beats Kentucky,
it's one and done. If you lose, you're out. It's not a 7-game series.
Right.
There are moments within an NBA series where you look back and you're like, that was an incredible shot.
Right.
You know, but there's only a handful of them because, you know, when a couple of Jordan's famous game winners, only like a couple of them were to send them on to a championship or to win a series to move on. But a lot of those are just after game one or two, you know, Jordan's game against Portland where he just did the shrug, you know, the Elo shot, I think advanced them to the next round. And then the pass to Steve Kerr and the Russell, the shot over Russell where he allegedly pushed him. I still think he
slipped. Paxson one here in downtown Phoenix.
Those are to win series, but only a handful of them in the NBA are actually to do that.
Michael Jordan was never upset, but can Kentucky get upset? There's a lot on the line on Saturday.
That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohn. Great guest on the show today, Mike Norvell, ASU's offensive coordinator, joining us. We're going to be joined by Russ Ortiz, former Diamondback, former MLB pitcher. He has a new company that's here local that's really interesting. He's going to be in studio to talk about that. And then to talk about who's going to be our next guest next segment and kind of lead into a little bit, Jack Murphy, head coach, NAU basketball. Not the only team that's traveling to Indiana this week. And believe it or not, the NAU Lumberjacks, they win last night. Before we get into the endeavors that they've had to basically endure over the last, I don't know, 12 hours. Here's a little bit of what went down last night. Jack Murphy, after the game, NAU knocks off NJIT, and the crowd was electric. They had a record crowd there, over 5,000 people, and it played a big factor for them last night.
I think it gives them that extra energy push that they need. And you know, we also knew, and it's been that way since I've been here, that late in games, you know, the altitude can start wearing on people's legs. So you can play with your minds a little bit. And so we knew if we kept it close and battled, you know, we could take over in the last 6 minutes. And fortunately, that's what happened.
As Jack Murphy after the game. Now, this, it's big for the program for a multitude of reasons, but this has kind of become the staple to show that Jack Murphy has arrived. You know, what he's done with this program over the last four seasons, turning them from a 3-win team to an 11-win team to a 17-win team to now a 23-win team. Just the jump that they've had in just 4 years has been drastic. But he hasn't really been on as many people's radar. Now he's on their radar because of what he calls last night a landmark win for the program.
Guys just step up and make plays throughout, and they play for each other. And it's a great thing to see. And you can't thank the crowd enough, because I'm sure that the players fed off the crowd quite a bit. I mean, we saw people in sections we didn't even know were allowed to sit there for basketball. So it was a great evening in terms of the excitement around by the crowd, and our guys were able to pull it through.
Great stuff. That's Jack Murphy after the game. Again, he's joining us live at 10:20 to talk a little bit about the what's ahead.
Yeah.
And that's Evansville coming up on Thursday.
I just wonder how much this is going to vault Lumberjacks basketball, these special moments, and for the freshmen who are there, will they start, you know, making the walk up Skydome a really tough place to play? Because it hasn't always been like it was last night, but that was really special to see. And as soon as the game was over, the game was on the CBS Sports Network, and I just kind of hit record on the screen and recorded all the fans storming the floor and tweeted it out. And it was amazing to see kind of how that took legs. And I think as fans see how much fun that was, he's really building a culture there. You really hope that it takes, because Sean McLaughlin and I were having this conversation on the set last night at CBS 5. We were saying it's really an underrated place. It's an underrated place to go. I mean, I want to call it a sleeping giant, but it's certainly it's got a lot of potential, and I think we saw some of that potential last night.
They have two great senior guards in Asim Dixon and Quinton Upshur. I did something on Upshur earlier this season. It was like right at the beginning in November, right when they were getting things started. This is a guy that went to the Virginia Military Institute out of high school. It wasn't his thing. Went JUCO route. And then came to NAU. So he basically played for three schools in 3 years, if you include high school. He had never even heard of Flagstaff, Arizona, let alone like been to the place. And the first time he ever went there was when he visited and met with Coach Murphy. And he is the type of talent that could play at the next level. Maybe
he's
not 6'5", the NBA.
Isn't he?
He's a 6'5" shooting guard that can shoot the lights out of the ball when they're not when they're falling. This is a guy that has D-League probably potential, but also should be able to play overseas.
Yeah.
They can attract and get on the radars of guys like this and tell Upshur's story. They could get a lot better talent than really they've ever had in the program, and Murphy is capable of bringing that type of talent in.
And you, all you have to do is show those pictures from last night and the video of the fans rushing the floor, and you just talk about how special of a place this is. You know, Asim Dixon also, a guy that can shoot the lights out, and Chris Yankee. I mean, it's just a nice little team.
It's a great team. It's a great story.
Go Jacks on Thursday.
So we'll talk more about the Jacks coming up next with Jack Murphy. Before that, before we're done with this segment, the Suns sinking fast
right now.
They have Golden State tomorrow, who made them look pretty dumb in Phoenix last time I was there. That was when Brendan Knight went down. And Charles Barkley was on the show yesterday. It's never a dull moment when Chuck joins the show. The former Suns great joined Brad and had a few interesting things to say about the state of the team, starting with he doesn't blame Jeff Hornacek for the situation they're in.
Well, I don't blame Jeff. Jeff didn't start sucking as a coach at the end of this year. Jeff did a terrific job. I bragged about the Suns all last year. I thought they were doing a good job. They were going in the right direction. And going out this summer, signing the deals they signed, drafting the players they drafted, they made this thing a train wreck.
Powerful. I mean, I think he said what everybody's thinking right now. What's going on with the roster? And it's not a roster anybody likes. You talk to any Suns fan, and they're having a hard time watching the games.
Why? Like, what is
the
it?
Because technical
I,
fouls,
because I
the
can't
turnovers.
Pinpoint it. Like there's it's a just, few things, but it just has that feeling deep down with the people that I talk to also that it's just not that likable of a roster.
Well, and your benchmark for Suns basketball is Charles. If you want to go back to the shot heard around the world, I mean, it's the finals with the Celtics. It's Steve Nash. It's not this. It's not fighting for the eighth playoff spot. This is when the Suns are close to rock bottom. And I mean, Eric Bledsoe, every time he turns the ball over, I get so upset because you just saw how efficient Steve Nash was with the basketball. Maybe Bledsoe will get there. I mean, he makes some incredible plays, but I feel like that's a huge problem right now.
Definitely took it for granted while it was happening.
Sure,
real
definitely.
Quick, one more sound bite from Charles yesterday about the direction that the Suns are going in.
Listen, I like Bledsoe. Bledsoe's a very good player. I like him. But when you give him that money and then you trade your best player, Dragic, first of all, I think we've had this company, I never thought they could play together. But they are both very good players now. Then I have no idea why you bring in Isaiah Thomas. I have zero idea why, unless you're trying to win the rec league with a 6-foot league.
So there's Charles Barkley after the show. So
nice that Charles would take time during the NCAA tournament. Busy man to come on the show here.
Yeah, love Charles.
It's a good get.
Him and Brad have a great relationship, and it was really nice of him definitely to join us yesterday. So coming up next, Jack Murphy headed to the CIT championship game with the NAU Lumberjacks.
What state is Jack Murphy in right now?
That's maybe the first question we'll ask him. Where in the world is Jack Murphy? That's coming up next. Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad on April Fool's Day 2015.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ.com, also streaming on AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports, filling in for Brad today on a Wednesday. And as we mentioned in the first segment, there's a lot of buzz around the state of Indiana, but as it pertains to the state of Arizona, it's around the team that is now traveling to the CIT Finals in Evansville, the NAU Lumberjacks, and we are happy now to be joined by the head coach of those Jacks that has everyone jacked up, like Mark McClune talked about, head coach Jack Murphy, and Jack, let's start off. Congratulations. But also, where in the world are you presently?
Well, first of all, Jared, thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. Mark, thanks for being here. And we are currently in Mount Vernon, Illinois, on our way to Evansville, Indiana. So we're getting to see the heartland of this country.
And I'm sure you're very familiar with Mount Vernon, Illinois. You travel there constantly, I'm sure, right?
I think I've been through here once before recruiting when I was at Memphis. It's not too foreign territory to me, but, you know, it's great for our guys. A lot of West Coast kids we have on the team are Florida guys, so it's good for them to see this middle part of the country.
Well, Coach, what means of transportation have you taken since leaving the Walk-Up Sky Dome last night? And how does this compare to a Big Sky road trip?
It's very comparable to a Big Sky trip, to be honest with you. You know, at 1:30 a.m., the bus pulled out from the airport there in Flag, got down to Phoenix around 3:45 in the morning, and then flew from Phoenix out here to St. Louis, and we're back on a bus from St. Louis to Evansville. So it's just like going to Missoula or Bozeman or Pocatello, Idaho. Not too much of a difference.
With that being said, since you're used to this, what is the time management like? What, because I'm sure on these road trips, as much the game is the important thing at the end of the day, the time management has to be the 1A to the game itself.
Yeah, we just actually stopped halfway to grab some sandwiches for the bus so the guys can get some food, and then we'll get to the hotel a little bit after 1, probably in about an hour, 1:30 Central Time, and then we'll have practice today at 5:30, get on the court for about an hour, and, you know, just get our legs under us, get some shots up, maybe go through a little scouting report, and then go out to a team meal tonight there in Evansville and have a film session later on this evening, and lights will be out, and guys will get a good night rest and be ready for the championship game tomorrow.
Now, I know they're college kids, and college kids bounce back pretty quick, but this is a long trip. How do you ensure that your team will have their legs tomorrow or on Thursday when they take the floor in Evansville?
You know, it's just one of those things where I think at this time of the year, you're playing April 2nd. I mean, you're going to have a pretty good shot of emotion, adrenaline, and you'll be ready to go. It's honestly not much different than what we do in the Big Sky in between, a Northern Colorado and a North Dakota, where you're flying throughout the day. If a flight delay happens, which it happened this year when we're getting from Grand Forks down there to Denver, I mean, you have long days in between, and you know, the guys competed. So they're used to this type of deal. I think the biggest challenge for us is we're playing a really good ball club in Evansville. I mean, I wish we were coming out here to play the Sisters of the Poor. Unfortunately, we're playing a really good team from the Missouri Valley Conference.
No questions. Jack Murphy joining us on the road right now, heading to the CIT championship game. Have you had a moment amongst the winning the game and having the quick turnaround to travel to kind of soak this all in and realize just how big and important this stretch has been for the program?
To be honest with you, not really. I mean, you're always focused on that next game. I think last week when we had the week to prepare for Kent State and the buzz around town and on campus about us finally hosting the game, you felt that excitement and, you know, you had a moment to kind of realize what was going on. But then Friday to Tuesday was such a quick turnaround. I mean, it seems like it wouldn't be, but it really was. It was a quick turnaround because Saturday, you don't know who you're playing until Saturday night when NJIT won, and then Sunday, Monday are kind of a blur, and the game's Tuesday. So, it probably won't be until Friday or even next week till I really sit back and realize what these young men have accomplished. But, you know, no matter what happens, I'm just so proud of this team and so proud of these young men and these student-athletes, what they've done not only for our program, but for the entire Northern Arizona University community, Flag staff, and right now, they're kind of carrying the state flag, if you might say, as being the only school in the west in the west of the Mississippi still playing basketball.
Wow, that's quite the label right there for your team, and congratulations on it. And what does it mean for all of the work that you've put in, the work that the kids have put in, to be able to experience atmospheres like the last two games, the atmospheres the last two games have been like inside the Sky Dome?
Well, it's incredible. When I took over the program, a large crowd would be about 1,200, 1,300. I mean, honestly, if you broke 1,000, you were talking that was a good crowd that night. And in the Sky Dome, 1,000 people, 1,200 people can just get swallowed up. I mean, it can almost seem like nobody's in the building. So for the crowds of the last two games, 3,600 last Friday night, almost 5,800 last night, the outpouring of students. Last Friday, we had over 1,000 students. Last night, we had over 2,000. You know, there's just a buzz about NAU basketball. And that just doesn't help our program. It helps all of NAU athletics. And it helps in recruiting. I mean, I've had the young men that have signed with us that believed in our vision. They're going to be freshmen next year. They've been texting me. The guys that are here on the team now that believed in us when we were selling only a dream in terms of Quentin Upshur and Chris Yonku and Jordan Martin, all those young men, Len Springs, they've worked their tails off to accomplish this and really build the program up to where it is. And, you know, we just have to do a good job of taking this momentum forward and carrying it on to next year, using this as a launching pad, not only for our program, but for our fan base, for NAU and for the students to really get involved and energized about NAU basketball.
There's no question about it. Coach Jack Murphy joining us here on the show, Mark McClune and Jared Cohen. Let's talk about on the court now. We've talked about how much this means for the program. Still got a game to play, like you mentioned. That's what your focus is on. Let's talk about Evansville a little bit. What are you expecting out of this team? And also, you know, why do they get to play at home? I don't understand why they have to, why you guys have to be the one making the truck all over the place, and they're the ones that get the home game. Maybe you can get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, no, I wish I knew. I wish I knew what the secret to that was, because certainly would have liked to vote in that. But Evansville's a really well-coached ball club. They run great offense. DJ Ballantine is one of the top players in the country that probably nobody knows about. And they've got some depth up front, really good shooters. But the key to their ball club is their offensive ability, their flow, and their continuity. The way that they pass the ball, share it, set screens for one another. And then Ballantine averaging 22 points out of their 68. I mean, obviously, he's a big key. I mean, this is a team that beat Northern Iowa earlier in the year. Northern Iowa ended up as a 5 seed in the NCAA sure. tournament. So they haven't lost many games on the season, and they've been especially good at home. It's going to be a great challenge for us. But if you're playing a basketball game on April 2nd, you're not going to be playing against some bumps. I mean, you're going to be playing against high-level competition. Mm-hmm. So we knew that. We've beaten some good teams ourselves, and we just have to go out here on the road and compete for 40 minutes.
You know, C. McLaughlin and I were having the conversation on the set last night, watching the post-game video and all the fans on the court, and just how I think we just talked about the potential of NAU and it just kind of how it's been maybe a little underrated to this point. What was your... You talked about that vision and that dream. Are you sort of realizing that right now, your vision when you came to NAU?
Yeah, you know what? I think that you're seeing the progress towards its completion. I mean, obviously, you're never fully done with your job, and our goal every year is to play in the NCAA tournament, win our conference tournament. But you're seeing great steps taken along the way. And the better our home environment can be, the tougher program will be to defeat in March. And, you know, I grew up in Las Vegas, spent a lot of time, obviously, in Tucson, 8 years there with Coach Olson. I knew the state, I knew the area, and I knew the draw that Flagstaff could be if you got kids on campus. And that's been our key. If you can defeat the perception of Northern Arizona, like when you tell people Northern Arizona University, some of them have never heard of it, never heard of Flagstaff, but when you get them on campus, it, you know, it sells itself. It really does. I mean, it's an amazing and beautiful campus. It's always developing. President Hager did a great job of bringing it forward over the last decade. And then President Chang has continued with that vision. And President Chang has been so supportive of athletics. It's been incredible. So I truly believe that we can be a factor out west, not only in the Big Sky, but, you know, on a regional to national scale. You know, and we're just getting started.
Coach Murphy joining us on the road, headed to Evansville. Last one for me, Coach. It's funny you mentioned, by the way, I talked to Mark last segment talking to Quentin Upshore with you guys downtown before the season, he mentioned that he had never heard of Flagstaff or Northern Arizona, and now look at him. The guard play with him and Asim Dixon has been huge for you guys. I'm wondering, though, when it all kind of from your standpoint clicked with this team, because guys got off to a kind of a slow start. You were kind of hot at the beginning of Big Sky play, maybe had a few games that you thought you should have won over the course of Big Sky play. So I'm wondering when it all kind of clicked to begin this incredible run.
Well, we had some great wins in the non-conference, beating Fresno State at home, Loyola Marymount, and winning at St. Mary's. I mean, you have some great wins there. But I honestly think it clicked after we lost at Montana the first time back in January, and we were 3-3 in the conference. We'd gotten off to a slow start. We'd had a difficult schedule. The next practice, the next day, that Friday in Bozeman, Montana, we just went through our half-court offense for about 45 minutes. And really, ever since then, I mean, we lost two other conference games. We lost a game in the conference tournament, and we've only lost three games since then. I mean, it's been an incredible run. That's over a 2.5-month span. And, I think that after that Montana game, the guys really, truly believed how good we could be. They knew that we could compete in the conference, which we did. And, they just trusted in one another. And that's the key, is when you get guys that buy in and believe in one another, you're going to have a good ball club. And, I give them a ton of credit. And a lot of teams at 3-3 could have turned the other way and, maybe ended up 9-9 in league. Instead, we end up 13-5 and, winning the game in the conference tournament and then winning four straight here in the postseason.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. Safe travels and get some rest, will you? All right?
Absolutely. Trying to get that voice back. Thanks, guys. Yeah,
good luck.
Good luck, Coach.
That's Jack Murphy joining us on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Coming up next, we'll switch gears to another in-state university, but a different sport, with football and spring ball is in full swing. The deputy head coach, offensive coordinator, Mike Norvell of Arizona State joins us coming up next. That's Mark McClune. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Switching gears, talking a lot of basketball so far on the show. Let's move forward to football. Football never stops. It's a year-round thing. That's what we love about it. And spring ball's in full force for ASU. That's Mark McClune of CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmatt today on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. And joined now by the deputy head coach, offensive coordinator for ASU, Mike Norvell, on the show. Coach, thank you so much for joining us today. How's it going?
Oh, everything's going great. About midway through spring ball, and guys are getting better, so it's always good.
So, Coach, I'm wondering, because, everyone you bring in, you're hoping could be a big part of the future of the program and can make an impact, but when spring ball starts, you have a notion of who the first and second team guys are and who the guys that are, you expect to compete once the fall rolls around, but spring ball is an opportunity for guys that may be lower on the depth chart to really make a big impact. And I'm wondering if there's been anyone that's just kind of turned your head a little bit with, like, wow, this kid can play. We knew he could, but we're a little bit impressed with what he's doing out here so far.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys that really kind of stood out to me in that regard. I think when you're looking outside, a guy like Eric Lauderdale, Eric is somebody that was highly recruited player coming out of the junior college ranks, and last year we ended up redshirting him just to give him a little bit more time to develop and to kind of get a better grasp of what we're doing here offensively. And he's really done a great job of improving himself and he's understanding what we're doing offensively, and he's really flashed and showing that he's a guy that can definitely help us and be a guy that we can count on and continuing to get better. And then up front, we're been really pleased with Billy McGee. Billy is a guy that's been a part of our program for I think 2-3 years now, and been behind Tyler, and now he's getting his opportunity, and it's really had a really nice spring, and continuing to get better. He's bigger, he's stronger. Coach Grizz and our strength staff have done a tremendous job with Billy, and he's been very, very consistent this spring, and really pleased with his progression.
Coach, we saw some video earlier in the show looking back at last year, the one-handed catches by Jalen Strong, and you mentioned Lauderdale stepping up and kind of turning some heads. First thing, where do you think Jalen Strong will go in the draft? How do you see his his career progressing from this point to the NFL? And then second of all, is Lauderdale there to take Jalen Strong's place, or will it be more by committee in the receiving core?
Well, I mean, obviously Jalen is a special player, and he's a guy that, you know, however high he goes, you know, I think whoever's getting him get in the field, because, you know, for all the talent that he has, you know, he could, you know, he's a tremendous a physical specimen, but he, you know, he loves the game, and he's an extremely smart wide receiver. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing him. You know, he'll be taken off the board pretty quick, and, you know, I think whatever team gets him is going to be getting a special player. You know, in regards to us moving forward, you know, we've had some flexibility. You know, we feel, you know, very strong about our running back core and the guys that we have coming back, and so we've been able to kind of move DJ Foster out to a you know, to primary receiver role, and he's been playing our nine man spot all spring. You know, him, you know, Ellis Jefferson, who actually was, you know, played for us in that same role there last year when Jalen wasn't on the field. Those two guys have done a great job this spring and handling that role. And then when you can also mix in guys like Eric, and you know, we've got a lot of competition out there. But you know, I think anytime you're replacing a guy, it's going to be a potential first round draft pick. You know, it's going to take a variety of guys to be able to do, you know, all the things that that Jalen was able to do, but the guys that we have here have different, you know, different strengths, and there's going to be some different areas that they're going to help bring their own, you know, special skills to that position. And so, you know, we're definitely excited where we're at, where we're going through here moving forward. And, we feel like we definitely have the right guys to be able to help us progress to that next step we're wanting to take.
Coach Mike Norvell joining us on the show with Jared Cohen and Mark McClune filling in for Brad Sesmat. You briefly alluded to the running back position. We got to see what DeMario Richard is made of at the end of last season, and has a lot of people very excited about the future at that position. Being out at a couple practice for spring ball, Kalen Ballage and Gump Hayes has really stood out. Gump seriously has the best nickname on your football team, by the way. There's no question about it. To talk about a couple of those guys, you know, because, you know, people knew about Ballage coming in, a highly heralded recruit, didn't get as much time as maybe you guys would have liked, or he would have liked last season. But those are guys that could make a big impact this season next to DeMario.
No question. Well, if you had to say at this point, you know, probably the MVPs of us this spring, you know, I think you know, DeMario and Kalen would have to be in that conversation. Guys that are just having, you know, tremendous springs. You know, I think Kalen is a guy that, you know last year he was young, you know, obviously, you know, you're trying to transition to being an every down back, you know, in regards to protections and really playing at the you know, playing at the physicality of what his size shows is something we've challenged him to be a more physical back. You know, he has taken that and really ran with it. And so I think, you know, anybody that's been out at spring sees that he's, you know, he's definitely progressed and, you know, done a tremendous job in the weight room and is just having a great spring. I think when you look at DeMario, everybody has got a flash of what he could be. You know, any special football player, you know, a guy that you know, can run the football, catch it out of the backfield, you know, loves to protect. I mean, he's a complete back. And then you bring in Gump, who is a home run hitter and a guy that can score from anywhere on the field. You're probably one of the fastest guys on this football team, and he's coming in and he's learning, you know, really trying to get a sense of learning what we're doing. We ask our guys to do quite a bit at the running back position, and he's making that transition and making it nicely. And then we got you know Jacob Brimhall. Is a guy that you know, has had a really nice spring. Is you know, a guy that started, you know, joined our program as a walk on, and it's really you know, had a very nice spring with a lot of explosive play. So we feel great about our running back position and where it can continue to grow to. All those guys are you know have their own unique skill sets, but you know, they're definitely you're having doing a great job for us.
Who gets credit for Gump's nickname? Do you know?
I don't know who gets credit for it, but I sure like it.
Yeah, Forrest Gump,
he was
right?
He was talking about at the end of last season compared to Forrest Gump. It's just great. I absolutely love it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, up front, as far as your offensive line goes, the guys blocking for Ballage and keeping Berkovici upright. Just kind of big picture on your offensive line, but also could you start Stephen Miller, the freshman at tackle? Have you ever had a freshman start a tackle for you before?
I've not had a true freshman ever start at tackle for us, but Steve's done a good job of coming in, and for somebody that should be in the spring of his high school senior year, he's really coming in, and love his athleticism, love his physicality. It's just getting used to the speed of the game, and obviously all the things that we ask those guys to do up front. But he is definitely a special talent, and he's going to be a great Sun Devil. And we're gonna put him in there, and he's getting to compete. But we're excited about all guys that are competing for those five positions. Every day they've been battling, and I think you see, Evan Goodman's been hobbled this spring and really not got the work that we were hoping he'd be able to get. Should be getting him back here soon these next few days. But I think you look at Sam Jones out there. He's been working at our left tackle spot with Steve, and those guys have done a tremendous job competing and really doing a very commendable job, learning that position, both as young players. Obviously we've got quite a bit of experience coming back inside with Nick, who's kind of the leader up front, Christian Westerman, those two guys, and then obviously we know we have NV, who's going to be a 3-year starter for us. And then I mentioned Billy earlier, but you look at a guy like Stephon McCray. Stephon, you're getting a great opportunity with Steve being out this spring, working that first group, and see the growth that he's had. A guy that played for us last year, started a game for us last year. He's really getting better, and we feel like the depth is starting to come. And it's young depth, but there's guys that we feel we can have anywhere from 7 to 8 guys that are going to be able to play for us. And then Quinn Bailey is another guy at the right tackle spot that I think is he's young, but really showing that he's got a bright future in front of him. And so I'm pleased with the guys up front. I think Coach Thompson's doing a tremendous job in their development, but those guys are really getting out there and working.
Yeah, gosh, Quinn was an absolute monster at the high school level out here. Yeah. Coach Norvell joining us on the show. Coach, Mike Bercovici has worked for a number of years now for this opportunity. He showed flashes of brilliance and flashes of areas where he needs to improve. So I'm wondering from your perspective, kind of what the day-to-day this time of year focuses with Mike, who it's his spot and it's his opportunity, but he still has to focus and continue to get better every day. So kind of the process and the focus each and every day with him.
Well, the thing I'm most proud of with Mike is that he's approaching every day like this is his first day on campus. And he's got that hunger, that fire of trying to correct every detail, every mistake. I mean, obviously being able to have those 3-4 games of experience, last year is invaluable just because of to get that game speed and that game experience is huge. But the thing I've loved is that he's coming in and he's hungry. He's not taking anything for granted, making the most out of every day, out of every meeting, every rep at practice. Mike is a tremendous competitor and really, really working to make everybody else out on that field play at a higher level. And so really pleased with his spring. Done a very commendable job in protecting the football, making great decisions, getting the ball out of his hands. Once he's back there slinging it, he can throw the ball as good as anybody out there, in my opinion. He's had a great spring and continuing to take in the reins of being the leader of this football team. And I think you walk out on that practice field and you see there's no doubt of who that guy is for us.
Well, Coach, in doing some show prep here, a quick Google search took me to the Log Cabin Democrat from 2001, and it looks like there was a second down and 41 that Mike Norvell caught a 61-yard touchdown pass for Central Arkansas. I couldn't find it on YouTube anywhere, but it looks like it's called The Catch. Where do we find this catch? Does video exist of this catch?
Oh, I'm sure it's out there somewhere. You're searching hard in the archives now. No, that was that was back in, that was my freshman year, so that was a while back then. So, that was a fun one. I don't ever want to be in a 2nd and 41 ever again. But if you have to be, at least that was a good outcome.
So you're telling me that there's the immaculate reception, and then right next to that, there's the catch by Mike Norvell that's out there. How have we not learned about this sooner?
I don't know. I mean, it's pretty high there in my book. So I guess I was gonna let everybody else know about it. So I appreciate you guys.
We're going to have to dig this up. This is going to be our spring football mission.
There you go. We'll expect a big sit-down interview with that one, Coach.
There you go.
Thank you so much for your time, Coach. We really appreciate it, and good luck with the rest of spring ball.
All right, guys. You guys have a great rest of the day. Thanks so much for your time.
You too, Coach. Thanks a lot, Coach. That's ASU Deputy Head Coach and Offensive Coordinator Mike Norvell joining us here on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Coming up next, two big things have developed that have been going on here today. Two different professional sports. A pitcher trying to get a job with a big league club. Pitching for the Diamondbacks today, a big opportunity for him. And then there's been some movement with the Dallas Cowboys that could involve a new push for Adrian Peterson. So that's all coming up next.
That's a tease right there.
Yep. I wrote that off the top of the head, not even written down. That's how I roll. Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports, Mark McLuhan and Jared Cohen filling in for Brad.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm not Brad, but I'm Jared.
Where's
That's
Brad
Mark.
Today? Do we know?
Oh, he's probably just out on the run.
Was he out for a run?
Just out for a run, yeah.
He was in flag last night, wasn't he?
He was in flag.
Did Brad storm the floor? Do we have video?
I don't know if his knees could take that.
I think I saw him with the crowd storming the floor.
Well, he probably would be taller than everyone else out there, so he probably
suit him up.
Probably
have you ever seen the pictures of Brad playing high school basketball?
I have seen a couple pictures.
Yeah. Junior Seau, I think, swatted him back in the day or something like that. He went up for a dunk.
I'm sure that happened to him a few times.
I think he could play back in the day. We're going to have to dig up video of that too, the Mike Norvell catch.
We should do a
two
side
projects
by side
for the
feature.
Summer.
There should be hopefully the summer has stuff to talk about though, but as it pertains to the Diamondbacks. However, that might be asking a lot. This is a lot of turnover around this team, but to bring in the final big storyline of spring training, Archie Bradley is starting for the Diamondbacks today rather than Josh Colemantor. And Colemantor is just kind of getting some reps in leading up to opening day.
He's combing his beard right now.
Leading up to opening day in a minor league game.
Right.
So they decided, Archie, this is your opportunity. It's between him and Robbie Ray, another prospect that they brought in over the offseason in a trade. I believe it was the D.D. Gregorius trade. The three-team deal with the Yankees and the Tigers.
He came from
the Tigers organization. It's between the two of them. So the question I pose to you as he's getting ready for a big start, this is the number one prospect of the team, even though he had kind of a rough year last year.
Although I saw Keith Law moving down to number two yesterday, but I still feel like Archie Bradley is,
Who did he put at number one? Shipley?
Braden Shipley from South Medford High School.
Remember, we did the show together the day after was drafted.
That's right, yeah.
And you were dropping all this Oregon knowledge.
And I feel like, the kid was like 3 years old when I was on TV in Oregon back in the day.
And now he's the number one prospect in the Diamondbacks organization. But the debate is, do you bring up a prospect who was going to be a starter onto the team and have him pitch in long relief out of the bullpen to kind of give him the notion of here's the day-to-day grind, facing big league pitching in crucial moments, but not for long stretches? Or do you send him back down to the minors so he can be a starter, which is his true role and how the future should be with him? You know, there's arguments both ways. I tend to be more along the lines of put him back in AAA and have him ready to be a starter and see him go 5-6 innings in minor league baseball so he could be ready to do that at the big league level when they call him up. But there's arguments to the other side of that as well.
Well, if Trevor Cahill didn't have the contract, didn't have, I think, the $13 million number, I think there's no question that Archie Bradley would be considered for a starting spot. I look at, and I did not follow Tony La Russa's club as closely as now I wish I had when he was in St. Louis, was too busy watching the Diamondbacks. But I look at like a Dan Herron situation when they went to the World Series and played the Red Sox, and Dan Herron kind of came out of the bullpen and he was the young stud. And that's the only example I have from Tony La Russa.
I have another Tony La Russa example, just thinking of it. Shelby Miller there, who he had a rough season last year for the Cardinals, but he was once their top pitching prospect, and they initially brought him up out of the bullpen as well.
And maybe that is by design, so a guy develops that confidence that can't be shaken, that he has really earned his keep in the big leagues and that nothing was handed to him. And with the arms that they have, they can do that for Archie, you know, right now. Archie, he's shown signs. I mean, flashes. I remember last year in spring training when he froze Albert Pujols with a breaking ball, and I was mystified that they didn't bring him up. And I know it's another year of control, but
that's
you've kind of squandered that year. If he starts in AAA, I mean, there's a whole year of Archie Bradley that we could have seen him pitch, and he had an arm injury last year, and scouts are saying that the big reason why he's been dropped to the second prospect is because he had the tendon issue, and some scouts don't think there's as much zip on his fastball and as much break on his breaking ball. But I don't know. I want to see Archie Bradley pitch. I think Trevor Cahill is going to get an opportunity, but if it's the same old Trevor Cahill,
do you think there's anything to the fact that him and Tuffy Goswitch had a nice connection at the end of last season when they gave Cahill another shot before the end of the year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Miguel Montero being gone, that might it clearly wasn't working between the two. And everybody says Cahill has great stuff, so let's see it translate in the game, because he has had some success before when he was in Oakland.
Before we switch gears to the NFL a little bit so I can pay off that amazing tease, your take on Yasmani Tomas, and is he even going to be on the big league squad to start the season?
I think he has to be, but throwing him in there at the hot corner, we'll see. They definitely
I don't think it happens.
Yeah. I mean,
Jake Lamb has played too well.
I think so, too. But you have so many outfielders, so they're going to have to make some decisions when it comes to their roster. I honestly feel like it can't get any worse in the last 2 years, so I'm a little more bullish on Diamondbacks baseball. Sure. Even if they're just in it until Cardinal training camp, that's fine with me.
Just don't be
out of it by Memorial Day.
Yeah, sure.
Just give us something to watch. Give us something to root for.
Well, that's coming up very closely. Opening day, Cardinals, Cubs is on Saturday. Opening day for the Diamondbacks is on Monday. Baseball is getting started. And
Churro Dogs.
Churro Dogs.
Get me one.
The Lolo's Chicken and Waffles at Chase Field. I'm looking forward to going to games just for the culinary experience.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I have a lot to look forward to.
I'm a little more excited about the baseball team, but I think I'm the only one.
I'm excited just because tis the season, tis the time of year for having optimism. That's the way I look at it.
Absolutely.
Switching gears to the NFL. So the Adrian Peterson story is still alive and well, even though at the owners' meetings last week, the Vikings, Coach Zimmer and everyone came out and said that we're not trading him. He is here to stay. He's a part of our future. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere today, Tony Romo has restructured his contract. And this is a tweet that I saw earlier. While it's not official, the Cowboys are likely reducing Romo's salary to $970,000 this season, clearing $12.824 million in cap savings.
Well, one, does that mean Tony Romo is going to be getting paychecks from the Dallas Cowboys Bobby Bonilla style through 2035?
Probably.
But, yeah.
Bernard Gilkey?
Are the Diamondbacks still paying him?
To bring this story local?
Yeah, they
might be still paying him.
But yeah, I mean, second of all, yeah, I mean, something's happening. Something's happening if they're restructuring. But this is the old, I mean, we saw this going back, way back in the day, to Eric Dickerson staring down the Rams. It's going to be a stare down, and it's going to be interesting to see how it ends, because Adrian Peterson has said he's done in Minnesota, but he's under contract. So what do you do?
For 3 more years.
Right.
Including this upcoming season.
And you saw this with Carson Palmer, too, in Cincinnati. Carson Palmer just retired.
Yeah.
And it worked out for him, because finally he was able to
get what he wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think, though, he takes another year off? Like because he missed all of last season. Carson, but didn't he take a year off when he retired?
You could kind of see this going 8 games, maybe.
Yeah.
Comes in halfway through the year. The Vikings decide they finally want some return on their asset and some investment, so they just trade him.
What does that mean, though, for the Cowboys, though, if they have a guy like Peterson running behind that line? I mean, it's one thing DeMarco Murray, but this is a future Hall of Famer here, who's going to be running with a lot of purpose next season based on how things went for him last year.
It's hard to get any better than DeMarco Murray, though. I mean, I really thought if Dez Bryant's catch was a catch, even though it's not legally a catch, though it should be a cat. If he scores in that game, I would have taken, if I was the Cowboys, I would have taken my chances against the Seahawks.
So do you think he ends up on another roster?
Yeah. I think that's what this is. Just, I mean, having no knowledge of the inner workings of the Cowboys cap management.
And what does this mean for not doing this for Murray, though? Like, because they could have done this to bring
Romo
DeMarco
said
Murray
yesterday,
back.
Murray asked Romo to take a pay cut.
And now he's doing it now that
he's
gone?
Romo said he would. So there's something there. I don't know what it is.
So Romo went through the media to tell the Cowboys that he would take a pay cut 3 weeks after DeMarco Murray signs with the Eagles.
Yeah, there's some PR going on here.
This is weird.
Getting messages out through the media. Who's reporting this? Who's got the scoop?
I have to
Who's
look
Tony
back
texting?
Up. I have to look it up. I see tweets, they go through my timeline, and I just lose track. I follow too many people, I guess.
Tried to grab Tony Romo at the Pro Bowl and declined politely.
That's not very nice.
No, Jason Witten talked to him. Great guy.
Texas guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tennessee guy.
Tennessee.
Yeah, number one.
I knew it started with a T.
But he is a Texas guy now as a Cowboy. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's Mark McClune, a former Texas guy. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad today on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports. Coming up next, talking to former Major League Baseball pitcher Russ Ortiz on the show. Don't go anywhere. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen. That is Mark McClune filling in for Brad today on the show. And we've got a really cool segment coming up here now. It's fun to we're Arizona-centric 100% of the time, an opportunity to talk to a Valley founder and CEO of a very exciting and upcoming golf company, and is also a familiar name to sports fans here in the Valley, as he pitched with the Diamondbacks, also spent a lot of time with the San Francisco Giants. Pitcher Russ Ortiz joins us in studio. Russ, it's awesome to have you here today. We really appreciate it. How's it going?
It's great. Thank you for having me.
It's great. So let's start off talking about your company and everything that's going into it, where you guys are at. You're a local company, the CEO and founder of Second Guy Golf, and it's an exciting venture that I know you have a lot of passion for, and it's been your life since you stopped playing baseball.
Right. Yeah. After baseball, I spent 2 years just being at home, and during that time, I was trying to decide what I wanted to do, kind of with the second life, second career, and so. This idea came up a few years back, and so I did some research, and anyways, when I decided to do it, I wanted to make sure if I was to spend time away from my family, it needed to count, and it needed to be something that I was really passionate about, and you know, baseball has always been my passion, and now that I wasn't doing that, golf has become my main focal passion as far as competitive sport and all that stuff, and so. So I was passionate about golf and then passionate about, you know, helping others, giving back. And that came from my time, you know, in professional sports. And so I combined the two. And so what we do at Second Guy Golf, we're a men's and women's golf apparel brand. And we give all of our net profits to charity. So I don't take anything from this company. It goes all out to charity, and I have three employees, and we're all passionate about the same things, and so we have a lot of fun, but we're also serious about building a great product, and we know if we build a great product that we think people will like it, and the more people that come and buy, the more people we're able to impact, and so we combine those passions, and what we try to do is we put that passion into what we do when we're making the product, and then also the people that we partner with and who we help out.
Why was giving back and all of the proceeds going to charity such an important part of your mission with Second Guy Golf?
Well, when I first got involved with communities and with charities real early in my pro career, I really started to see how much of an impact one person can make. You know, I know I have a uniform on and things like that, and that helps, but even when I didn't have a uniform on or I saw other people giving their time, it was just something that really impacted me in a great, great way. And I started to understand that, you know, we as people can really make an impact, significant impact on others, especially when you give your time. Money's great and all that stuff. I mean, you know, you need that to buy things and to help other people. But really the most valuable thing I found out you give someone is your time. And so from that, it became really important to me to really focus on that. And I did that all through my pro career. And it's just something that I feel like it's just been built in me to, you know, as a passion to do. I love seeing, you know, the reactions of people, especially kids, you know, when we're able to help out or able to do something for them.
Russ Ortiz joining us on the show, and Russ, golf's played such a prevalent role in your life, even back when you were playing. How prevalent is golf in a baseball clubhouse? Because we hear about it all the time during spring training and even during the season, an opportunity to get away. But how prevalent was it for you, even during your playing career?
It was big. I mean, it like you just said, it helps you take your mind away from just the pressures of you know, playing on the baseball diamond, and you know, sometimes you just have a bad streak and you need to get away, and this is, you know, golf is a great way to just release some of that, you know, tension and all that and get out there and go, even though golf is hard and it can be frustrating, but you know, when you're out in these beautiful courses and some, most of the time it's great weather and everything, I mean, you can't help but kind of regroup and refresh. And so, but in the clubhouse, I mean, you know, especially us, you know, pitchers, we have the most time to play. So especially amongst us pitchers that we go play, I mean, so there's always a battle of who's better than who. And so there was always that, you know, that thing where you get bragging rights, you know, after a round and you come in and I was fortunate to play with some people that have been around, played some really special places. And especially with Atlanta and having John Smoltz and Greg Maddux there. And we just got to play in some unbelievable
yeah, what was
courses.
That like? Like playing, those guys are like the ultimate competitors. So what was a round of golf with Glavin and Smoltz like and Maddux?
It was fun. I mean, you super competitive, and that's what made it fun, you know, because it made you bring your A game every time you're out, you know, and Smoltz beat you. I mean, Smoltz would compete against me separately and against the two other guys separately, and then all of us, three against one, to see if he can beat us. And so he's the ultimate competitor. And, you know, my first year with him, he won a lot. And then, but my second year with him, you know, we actually won a lot from him. And so it's just one of those things where, you know, we just never stop competing, I think, as athletes. And that's why I love golf so much, especially now that I'm not playing baseball. That's what gets my juices flowing, and so does giving back and helping out, you know, other people. I mean, those are two things. That's why, you know, I built this based off of the passion.
Sure.
What is your best round of golf, and how does it compare to being on the mound, Game 6 of the 2002 World Series?
My best round of golf is 68. I shot that here at Camelback.
Say that again. So, I've never heard somebody say
68.
That.
68. I shot that at Camelback Golf Club and with a buddy of mine. And, you know, I think I started off the round with four straight birdies, I believe.
Just in the zone.
So it was one of those things where you just don't think about it. Just keep playing and see what happens. And I've shot a few times, you know, under par, but that's my best round. And nothing compares to being on the biggest stage in baseball, you know, pitching in the World Series. And, you know, for me, Game 6, I got another shot, you know. And another thing with just coming real quick is that, you know, we love giving people, you know, a second shot at some, second chance at something. And so that's the organization we partner with. But so for me, that happened in real life. I got a second chance to redeem myself, you know, in the World Series. And I had a horrible game two, and I got another shot, and I was going to make it count. And being on the biggest stage and pitching in a zone like that, there's nothing like it. I mean, that's probably the most exciting time for me that I've ever had in sports, in any competitive thing. And it was almost like, you know, there was nobody there. It was just me and the catcher and everything.
Kind
and,
of for love of the game type of thing.
Was that Benito Santiago? Who was your catcher that night? I don't. Yeah.
Benito was our catcher, and it was just like I said, it was just me and him. And I really didn't hear the crowd until I got taken out, and then it was like, you know, to realize how loud it was. And but before that, I mean, literally, I know a lot of us, especially in baseball, you know, love to make fun of the whole clear the mechanism thing.
Yeah. Mechanism.
But literally, I mean, when you're in the zone, I mean, you know, you don't hear stuff. And that's what it was. And that was the coolest feeling that I've ever had. And to do it on the biggest stage and come so close to actually winning the whole thing, that game, you know, it was a pretty unbelievable feeling.
Was that when the bat boy? I'm trying to remember. Was that game six?
That was earlier. No, that was earlier. Yeah. So still. That was when we were up 5-0 and
that's
lost.
That's right.
Sorry to bring that up then. Yeah. leave it to a Texas Longhorn to bring up a bad memory for an Oklahoma Sooner. So Russ, Giants have won multiple World Series over the last few years, but they haven't been able to do it 2 years in a row. So what is the mindset after you, I mean, win a World Series for a player trying to bounce back? How hard is it to do that in consecutive seasons?
I think it's extremely hard. In this day and age, you know, you don't have the same players on the team that you did the previous year. And so, you know, one thing that the Giants have done is that they've brought in players and they've gelled really well together. But you don't always have that. And so it's really hard now that, you know, when there's so many people moving around and you have to find the right pieces. And sometimes it takes a year to get that going. And I think in the Giants case, that's a big reason, I think, why they've done so well. It's just, you know, they got the pieces in place and they won it when they shouldn't have in 2010.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they picked up some more pieces or whatever, and then 2 years later, and then they're winning it again. And then same thing, and then 2 years later, they're winning it again. So, sure. I think it takes time a little bit, and that's why I think it's so hard, is because, you know, with injuries, with trades, with, you know, you releasing people, free agency, guys deciding to go somewhere else and stuff, it's like, that's why I think one of the reasons why it's so hard. And the other reason is that it's hard just to get to the World Series in general. And so so the teams that can even get to the World Series multiple times, whether they win or not, I think is a pretty special thing.
So you're flipping around. You're home doing some work, flipping around the TV, baseball's on. Who's the guy, who's the pitcher that the TV you just kind of stop and watch? What moves the needle now watching baseball for you?
I key on pitchers, obviously. When I was with the Giants, our closer is Rob Nen. Threw extremely hard.
Did he throw like 102 miles an hour?
I mean,
missed that.
He threw upper 90s, 100. And so, and he had one of the most unbelievable sliders I've ever seen. But he was able to paint spots. And it was incredible. Some guy throw that hard. Then I got to pitch with John Smoltz, who threw extremely hard, was able to paint spots. And so I love watching the guys that can throw really hard and that can just paint the corners and all that. And so guys like Justin Verlander, I mean, I love watching him pitch. And and even a younger guy like Steven Strasburg, you know, he can do all that. And and now Clayton Kershaw, you know, when I played with Clayton, when I played against him and then played with him in 2010, he didn't do what he was able to do right now. And, you know, he was young and he was finding his way there. But so now it's so fun to watch him throw to where he can just paint. And then so I love watching those guys because they're not only exciting, but they can throw inside effectively, you know. And that's one of the things that I think is a lost art now in the game of baseball is pitchers being able to throw inside effectively. And so those guys can do that, and they throw extremely hard. And, you know, there's other young guys I know throw hard. I just haven't had opportunity to see them all that much.
If I could just jump in just to follow up on that point. So somebody hits bonds when you're with the Giants. How did it go down that you had to go out and protect your teammate? What were the conversations like? Were there any? And how did you make sure if you pitched inside that it wasn't to injure somebody?
Yeah. Well, he had so much gear on. It's just like, does it matter? You know, I mean, I think you can tell when guys do it on purpose.
Yeah.
And some guys just want to challenge him, and some guys want to try to scare him, you know, quite frankly. And never worked, but whether it hit Bonds or, you know, guys I played with, Jeff Kent, and who was an MVP, and whoever it was, if you know it was on purpose, and it's just like, well, you know, you have to pick your spots. Dusty was not a big believer. It's just like, yeah, we're just going to retaliate right away. It's like, if you're going to do it, we got to pick our spot, and we got to make sure that, you know, you don't injure somebody. So that's the biggest thing, is injuring somebody. If you're going to be able to go to hit somebody, you have to be able to know how to do it. You know, I mean, I worked and worked and worked to be able to throw up and under the chin without hitting somebody, and that it takes work. You know, you just can't just say, I'm just going to do it, or throw one inside to move them off the plate. And that's just something I think you're seeing nowadays, or you're seeing a lot less of nowadays. And guys are getting hit. Guys are, I mean, thrown behind guys, and then some guys unfortunately have been hit up in the head area.
It's crazy. So before we go, Russ, can you talk about a little bit more where people can go to find Second Guy Golf Apparel, and when they do purchase a shirt, a hat, you name it, what ends up going with their purchase after the purchase is made?
Yeah, you can go to secondguygolf.com. It's 2ndguygolf.com. And we have all of our products there. And, you know, you can go to a page where it talks about the charities that we support and that we partner with. And the two main ones are Feed My Starving Children. All the men's apparel that you buy online goes there. Each polo that you buy from a men's polo, it goes to help feed a child for about a month and a half. And so you figure that's about 8 polos that you buy feeds a child for a full year. And that was a cool thing about us partnering with Feed My Starving Children is that, you know, we can do so much with just one polo. And then the women's side online, it goes to a rescue home in the Philippines called Josie's Angels. And so it helps to support those girls to be able to help support Josie and the people that work with her and being able to keep those girls safe, taking them out of situations of all kinds of horrible abuse. And it's helping change those girls' lives, you know, helping break the cycle from them just doing the same old thing that everybody else does. And it's really cool to see girls going to college and getting an education and really fulfilling dreams, making something of themselves. And so, so with all that, you go every purchase, like I said, all of our net profits, go to charity and, you know, you're able to help us make a big impact. You know, like we like to say, you know, you buy, we give.
And I've seen you've worked a little with Phoenix Children's Hospital too. That's hits close very to cool. home with this guy to my right.
Spent 8 days there in November, man. It's just such a valuable thing to have in our community.
Yeah.
But why was it important for you to give back to the Children's Hospital?
Well, when I was with the D-backs, we went and visited Phoenix Children's a few times. And I have a tough time, to be quite honest, going and seeing, you know, little ones hooked up to, you know, to machines and things like that, or just getting out of surgery. That's tough for me, but I know it's important for them and their parents and their other, you know, siblings or loved ones. And so, so when we first started, that's Phoenix Children's was the first place we want to start because of what it did for me when I was with the D-backs and going to visit, knowing what they do and seeing how much they care about the kids and their families. And so, what we did is we supplied lunches for their cancer and blood disorder center. So when kids would come in to do their treatments, sometimes they're long, and we were able to supply meals for them. And you know, we're hoping we can do a whole lot more with not only Phoenix Children's but any other children's hospital, you know, here in town or around the country and things. But it's important for us to really make a huge impact here in Arizona. And as we grow, I think you'll see us doing a lot more. I think there's things that, you know, may not see right out in front of you, but, you know, but we're doing things here in the Valley, and hopefully as we grow, people will be able to see us do bigger and better things.
That's Russ Ortiz, former Major League Baseball pitcher, now the founder and CEO of Second Guy Golf. You can see all their great golf apparel on secondguygolf.com. Russ, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.